and welcome to the Non Another Podcast. I'm Jamie Smith, and joining me this week are Natalie and Kevin to talk about a win at Turf Moor. Burnley 2-1 victors over Everton, thanks to a very, very dramatic last-minute goal from Scott Arfield. The first time we've ever scored in the last minute of a Premier League game, apparently. Tough one to analyse this, Natalie, because I don't feel like we played well at all, but a result that we would certainly have taken before the game.
Absolutely. I've never been so delirious for such a poor performance before. I mean, we struggled against this Everton side. Let's be realistic here. I am absolutely delighted with the win, and there are a lot of positives to take from the game, which no doubt we can come on to soon. But as a general feeling for the game, I just thought we played a little negatively at times. I thought we struggled to get anything created up front. I thought we were just basically, you know, hoofing long balls up vaguely in the direction of Sam Vokes.
And there were a lot of long balls, particularly in the second half.
We had our backs to the wall for most of the game. So, but they didn't panic. So let's move on to the positives from this game. They didn't panic. They didn't, they didn't make too many errors. They didn't particularly capitalise on some errors from Everton either, but, you know, they stayed in the game. And it was nice to see that even at 1-1, when they had an opportunity to try and get forward, they did do that. And that's how we ended up with the goal in the first place.
I think that's a good point. I think I think Everton had settled by that point. I think they'd done everything they felt they could, missed a few chances, not taken opportunities. Heaton was in good form, and I feel like they decided that a point was a good result at that point. And yeah, you're right, we thought we'd have one good crack at an attack and scored from it, which is effective football, I suppose. Kevin, I don't know about you, but when I saw the team, obviously we were expecting Defoe to be out, Gray was suspended, turned out Boyd was injured after last week as well. I didn't see that team getting any sort of result. And also, Dash, before the game, already seemed to be making excuses, talking about injuries that people had.
Yeah, and I think certainly when we saw that Boyd was out and Kiteley was coming in, I was surprised that we didn't bring Bamford in at that point. I think that for me shows that Bamford is certainly never going to start a game for us unless we have lots and lots of unavailability up front. And when we get the likes of Gray and Barnes back in, I'd surprised if Bamford even gets these 2-minute cameos he gets at the end. If he can't get in the team with Gray, Barnes, Defoe and George Boyd out, then that's it for Bamford's chance to Turf Moor. But I think I was the same. I thought, you know, looked at the squad of the team and thought, this is where I was starting to think, you know, this shows where we really lack that strength in depth. We've got, you know, a decent enough first 11. Obviously, there's some areas we'd like to be improved, but it's we've got a strong enough decent first 11. But once you go away from that, I'm not a fan of Michael Kiteley at all in the Premier League. I don't think he's a Premier League quality player at all. But having said all that, it wasn't a vintage performance, but it was a very effective performance, I think, in that we've come away with a fantastic victory. So, I can't complain too much with the team, because at the end of the day, all the players right there did the business.
Yeah, I find it really tricky because, like I said at the start, I don't think we played well. And I think Everton probably deserved even to win. Certainly, I think Ronald Koeman was complaining that football's unfair afterwards, and I think he was right, to be honest. We've had games this season that we've not got the points we deserved, and I think that was the case for Everton today. I think a draw would probably just about did enough to get a draw, but if Everton had won the game, taking the chances that they had, I don't think we could really have complained about it. Natalie, individual performances though at the back, again, Michael Keane I thought was very, very impressive. A lot of people impressed with Ben Mee, although he did make that mistake for the goal, and Tom Heaton continued his fantastic form from last weekend at Southampton.
Yeah, he did. I've been really impressed with our defence. I loved them last season, and I thought they did very, very well and very much contributed to one of the reasons why we won the championship last year. But more importantly, I've been really impressed to see how they've settled into Premier League life. They just look so composed at the back, and the five of them together play very, very well. I still have some reservations about Matt Loughton, but I think he did all right today, actually. I think he handled himself pretty well. A couple of nervy moments, but he made some really good interceptions in places and some really good, sensible clearances when he needed to. So, you know, defensively, I think we are really, really good. And I think it will be a contributing factor to us staying up if we manage to this season. But the key elements of the game that we need to improve on are our attacking options. All that we did today was just pile balls forward. And what that does is Premier League sides don't miss opportunities. The good ones don't miss opportunities to pick up a loose ball from midfield. And we've seen that so much this season. So all that happens is that they get possession back and a whole new wave of attack starts again. And you are inviting so much pressure onto us. So as good as the defence are and as well as they're playing, they are just having to soak up constant pressure.
Yeah, Dash talks about fine margins a lot, doesn't he? And I think today was one of those where that was really evident. There were a couple of moments. Michael Keane got a touch on a ball that looked to be going right to Lukaku 6 yards out. I think if he doesn't get that touch, Lukaku scores, or he could easily put it into his own net. A couple of blocks that were goal-saving blocks. And
yeah, I think, you know, you've got to think about last season. We talked on the podcast a lot about how the way we play is very unattractive. We talked about how, despite being the best team in the league, winning the league, actually a lot of the time we were not very a lot of fun to watch. A lot of games were quite difficult visually. They were not very enjoyable games, and we'd just grind out results. And that's when we were the best team in the league. So when we're one of the worst teams in the league, which obviously we're going to be this season, that's just going to be exacerbated. I don't think we can go from having unattractive football when we're the best team to then becoming, beautiful Barcelona-esque when we're one of the worst teams. So I think it's really important to take that into account. I think the way we play and the way we set up makes us look a lot worse kind of creatively than we are, I think. That said, we are clearly lacking some areas. I think, obviously, Dyche would have liked to have brought in another winger in the summer, which he tried to do and failed. I think that would have made a big difference. We've still got the likes of Andrea Gray to come back in the team and Ashley Barnes, both players who offer, I think, very different options up top. So we've got some different things we can do there. So I think there are improvements to make, and hopefully we'll go back in for another wide player in January as well. So although I think, definitely there are some areas for concern with in terms of the way we build play for going forward, I think there are things to look forward to as well, and also considerations to take in that, I don't think it's 100% that we're just a bad team. I think there are also, it is also partly just the way we set up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I thought it was quite interesting today that we had a couple of players in the team that have barely started this season. Arfield, I think, hadn't started for a month. Tightly, it's his first league start of the season, I think. Natalie, I find Arfield's performance really, really hard to assess, because watching it live, I was under the impression that he'd had a really bad game. I think I said stinker on Twitter, which was maybe a bit harsh in hindsight. But looking at the stats, it seems like he actually did quite well and came up with the goal at the end. But social media was full of people saying that he should have been taken off as a substitute because he was on the brink of being sent off. It was really, really hard to know what to make of Arfield today.
So hard. Do you know what? This whole game tonight, and I'm finding myself genuinely struggling with this podcast a little bit, just because everything about me wants to just come on this podcast and just still be like, oh my God, we've did it. I can't believe we got a point, and just be jumping up and down and incredibly happy. But then the flip side, I'm like, oh my God, we played so bad. And then we've also got other things to do. So this is a really, really hard.
It's weird, isn't it? I mean, like, we were really gutted after Arsenal because we played brilliantly and got nothing. And this time we played pretty mediocre and got all 3 points.
But, and I think your analysis of how Arfield played today just sums that up perfectly, because he was the epitome of exactly what was the weirdness about today. I agree with you as well in that when I was watching the game, I was like, oh God, Arfield's having an absolute stinker here. And this is like, this is really, really tough. And then I was of the same opinion that he should have been taken off just because he wasn't effective at all. And plus as well, to be fair, he looked absolutely knackered at the end. And that's because he did put a shift in. So let's be very clear, he worked very, very hard, even if some of that play wasn't particularly effective. But then, like you say, when we are presented with the stats from the game, you think, well, actually, he only missed, what, 3, 4, did you say, Jamie, of his passes? And you just think, oh God, actually, that's...
Yeah, my maths is really bad, but I reckon it must have only been a couple of times.
I mean, it's a challenge that we face all the time, and it's, you know, we sometimes get feedback on social media or through our email about the difference of opinions, and we can only give our opinion on a podcast of... It's a very subjective opinion as a podcast. It's how we feel. It's what our assessment of a game is. We're always going to have people who disagree. I mean, there was people around me today, for example, who were absolutely ripping Ben Mee to pieces and saying that he was like, he should not ever play in the Premier League and he's a disgraceful player. I thought, apart from his mistake from the goal, I thought he had another really solid game, and I think he's settling into Premier League football really, really comfortably. So, you know, we have to be careful. And this is a really interesting podcast for me because we are going to divide opinion on this game. There will be people out there who will criticise us for trying to pick holes in the game when we've just got a great 3 points. But, you know, we have to be realistic here. It's a long old season. There are going to be people who say Ben Mee should never play again or Ben Mee was brilliant. I had actually, it just goes to show it's not just from inside the ground as well. My boss just texted me about half an hour ago. He's a huge Everton fan, which I'd kind of put to the back of my mind until after the game. I thought, oh, this is going to be an interesting Monday morning. But he said he's read an article where the one national press article had said that Tom Heaton was head and shoulders above the man of the match, which suggests that... Everton absolutely created a gazillion chances and Heaton was having to rescue us. And actually, I don't remember Heaton having to save that many goals. I think he, you know, he saved a couple. He had a really good save as well from a shot from us quite a way out.
7 saves, which is quite a lot for a Premier League game, but compared to last week, it's hardly any.
I think loads of those saves actually came in the first kind of 5-10 minutes. I think Everton started quite strongly and...
Yeah, there were 3 in 10 minutes. Well, 1 was in the second minute that I think was probably the most important. So obviously, if you go behind after about 80 seconds of the game, I think then it's a totally different match.
Yeah. It just didn't feel like we were... It felt like we were under the cosh in terms of possession. But I think for a lot of the possession that Everton had, I don't think... It certainly didn't feel like the Arsenal game did. You know, Arsenal, it felt like they were going to score at every opportunity. It just didn't feel like that today for me.
There were a couple of times when I don't think Everton really made the most of the openings that they had. So I think might have been Bolasie went down the left. And Lukaku's unmarked 6 yards out, the right ball when it's tapping, and the cross was overhit. And that's a really good chance, but statistically it probably doesn't go down as a chance because they didn't get a shot away, but a better ball and that's easily a goal. But, yeah, I think probably coming off the back of the Southampton game when they had so many shots and Heaton had so much to do that a mere 7 saves probably sounds like he's had quite a quiet day, although I still think he was one of our better performers overall. Kevin, not just Kightley and Arfield who played, who we've barely seen, though. Tarkowski came on in midfield more by having nobody else to play there. And also John Flanagan came on at left-back for Stephen Ward, whose injury hopefully isn't too serious. And I thought Flanagan, although he only played a few minutes, was actually really impressive. He was very positive on the ball, wanted to get forward, and I think he added something a bit different.
Yeah, definitely. And it's quite fitting that he came on against Everton as well, obviously, on loan from Liverpool. He offered something different. Like you said, I think he was very positive on the ball going forward. He looked a lot more composed. Obviously, the only other time we've seen him was at Accrington, when I thought he looked a bit like a headless chicken in that match. But he was very composed, both on and off the ball. He looked very switched on. It looks like he's got very good football in mind. And obviously, we didn't get to see him for too long. But when the time comes when we do get to see him play for a little bit longer, I from what I saw today, I've got a lot of confidence in what he can bring to the team. Obviously, it's a shame for him to come in through injury, but we hope that Stephen Ward, his injury isn't too severe, because I thought he had an excellent game as well. But if it isn't a serious injury, then I'm very confident with Flanagan coming in after what he showed today.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing, that he played a few minutes and didn't look, like you say, in the Stanley game when he looked massively off it, didn't look like that at all. And I think if anything, it was probably an improvement on Ward today, albeit off a very, very small little cameo of, I think it was, 10 minutes or something. Natalie Tarkowski in midfield is something a few people have put forward as an idea, although I think Tarkowski himself said in a Q&A that he's never really played there. I've got to say, I didn't notice him that much when he came on, but he had, half an hour or so in midfield. How do you think he got on today?
I thought he was really good, actually. I think it was a very, very difficult circumstance for him to come onto the pitch, because his appearance and the only way he could play almost in front of the back four, it was just, it changed the formation and it changed the dynamic of the game. But he came on and he looked pretty comfortable when he came on, and he obviously had one job to do. I think he was just marking Lukaku all the time, because if you watched him and followed him off the ball, he didn't make any attempts to attack or look at anybody else. I think Dyche had brought him on just to man-mark him, and at the point we were 1-1, it felt like Dyche was doing anything he could to try and protect a point, which would have been a vital point if we'd have only got one. It would have been really... Sorry, not a vital point. It would have been a bonus point if we'd have got that. We didn't really expect anything from the game. I'm personally a huge fan of Tarkowski. I think he's quite a subdued player. He just... From what I've seen of him, he just comes on, does what he needs to do. He's not fanfare.
Yeah, he's not very flashy, is he?
No, he isn't. He's a really solid defender, and he just comes in, does what he's told to do, and goes again. You know, when we had to play him away at Chelsea, was it, when he just had to come on and play in midfield, he just kind of shrugged and got on with it. And there's a lot to be said in the modern game about a very unassuming player like that who just grafts. So, yeah, I think he did great, and I have no problem. I think when we do inevitably lose Michael Keane, I'm not overly concerned, because I think he will be able to slot in. I think we've got some real quality on the bench there.
Yeah, I think that's probably the position where we do have the best depth, in that Tarkowski, I think, was probably signed with an eye on Keane being sold at some point in the future. I'm a bit surprised he hasn't played with Keane, but I think when Keane does go, Tarkowski will be an excellent player. He was only actually on for 20 minutes today. I don't know why I thought he was on for so much longer. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for Tarkowski's performance today. Kevin, one slight concern, although an excellent result, the home form's excellent with 10 points from, what is it, 5 home games or something, is that all the points have come from home. And we're going to have to start getting something away, otherwise there's just going to be so much pressure on the home games. It's starting to feel a bit like the Owen Coyle season, where we had these good results at home, but just kept getting battered on the road.
It is, yeah. Obviously, I think, like we said last week, we have played some very good teams away from home. And it that continues in the next match as well, with Minnows Manchester United. But we, you know, I think we'll be able to see a little bit more when we play some of the more... some of the more mediocre teams who are more around us in the table away from home. That's going to be the real test, because if we continue to struggle against the likes of Hull, Middlesbrough, the other teams who are down at the bottom, then that's when it's going to be more cause for concern. I think it's a little bit difficult to judge our performances away from home when we've played the calibre of teams that we have. That said, the difference is striking. You know, the performances against teams like Arsenal and Everton and Liverpool at Turf Moor have been very, very different to performances against similar-ish opposition away from home. So I'm not sure it's time to panic or get too concerned quite yet, but maybe in a few weeks' time, when we've played some more teams who are a little bit more like us, we'll be able to judge a little bit more how that's going to be as a theme throughout the season.
Yeah, I think it's probably more a medium-term problem than a short-term problem. I mean, yeah, we probably don't expect to get much from the United game next weekend that we'll come on to at the end of the we'll come on to at the end of the podcast, as always. But yeah, we're going to have to start getting something away from home soon, I think. Natalie Dash said a couple of times earlier in the season that he felt like luck would start to even itself out. I suppose today probably shows that that has been the case a little bit. We're all really chuffed to get a win, but again, I don't think we really deserved it. And I think Everton will certainly be watching the tape of that game and thinking, how did we lose that match?
To be honest, I can't imagine that any Burnley fan watching any highlights or reflect on today's game will care in the slightest that we didn't.
No, exactly. I'm quite looking forward to seeing the highlights. Quite yeah, exactly, oh, they should have scored there. Oh, they should have scored there. Like, oh, and that one as well. Goodness.
Especially when it's comfortable and you know what happens at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Dyche is right. It does even itself out at the end. And it's really hard to take in the roller coaster of emotions that is the Premier League. And I think sometimes we're all guilty as fans of letting it get to us when those unlucky decisions got against us, you know, especially with the Arsenal game, because it's such a long season and it's a horrible league sometimes to play your football in when you are a team like Burnley, you're having to scrap for every point. And what that does is it influences supporters' decisions and it makes people very prickly and you get very hypersensitive to everything that happens. So when something like the Arsenal winner goes against you, you know, you're screaming and you're shouting and you're annoyed and people are arguing with each other and everybody's really annoyed about it. But when you get a game like today, you do kind of forget all of those things that have gone on in the background. And you think, oh, well, I don't care. You know, we've managed to get a point and we didn't deserve it. And we're really happy anyway. So I don't care how we didn't deserve it today. I think it's all that's happened today is that we've won some bonus points, which we weren't expecting. We didn't deserve. But that's the nature of the game. And, you know, we've had it go against us that many times that I really don't care. I think it would be naive of us not to take some lessons from today. And I'm sure Sean Dyche will, just to say, well, actually, against another side and certainly away from home, we will not get away with playing like that. We'll get severely punished. So there's a lot to learn from it. But right now, I'm just going to bask in glory and smugness and not give any hoots whatsoever as to whether or not we just
really thought you were going to do a swear there. So, yeah, well controlled. Kevin, one impressive performer as well that we haven't mentioned yet, involved in both goals, Johan Gudmundsson, very good strike that hit the bar for the winner in the end, but it was his touch that freed up the space for Scott Arfield in the build-up to the opener, and goalkeeper spilled the shot and Volz had a tap-in. But it was two really, really impressive moments of quality that made a big difference for Burnley in the end. And we've not really seen that sort of end product decisiveness from him yet.
No, absolutely. And yeah, I think that Arfield almost stole Goodmanson's thunder, really, with the winner at the end. Because if that had been even, you know, half an inch lower, I think that would have been in and been one of the goals of the season, if not the goal of the season. It was a fantastic, fantastic strike. And he can probably count himself a little bit unlucky that it wasn't his goal, but I'm sure he's not complaining too much. And similarly, for the first goal, the little flick on that he had that set Arfield free and took acres of space was sublime. It's something what I'm looking forward to rewinding a couple of times when we watch Match of the Day later on. It almost reminded me a little bit of icon Keith Tracy, who did a
hashtag Keith.
Yes, probably his only positive contribution in his entire Burnley career. He had a fantastic flick on a few years ago as well. He was playing for us, but it was just one of those things where you actually just want to watch. Just watching the goal, you just want to rewind via just that fantastic touch many times. It was, I think it's something we lack in the team actually, because he's probably one of the few players we've got who has really got that creative spark. He can do something a little bit different, and hopefully we can now start. I think he started the season quite slowly. He wasn't poor, but he wasn't outstanding either, which is probably understandable. You know, he was playing in the worst team in the Championship last season. Now he's up in the Premier League, But I think slowly he's been getting better and better each week, and the last few weeks he's been getting a lot better. And obviously we really saw that creative spark from him today, so hopefully we can now see him continue to grow and have an impact like that on a more regular basis.
Yeah, he's going to be a really important player for us this season, I think, and I still think there's a lot more to come from him. Although he was playing for Charlton last season and they were pretty poor, his raw numbers, goals and assists, was so impressive for the worst team in the league last year, and I don't think he's got a goal or an assist for us yet, so I think real direct contributions that lead to goals, I think we're going to see a lot more from Gudmundsson. And if Defoe's missing, I think he's one of the players that can step up and take that sort of leading creativity role. Natalie, just before we start wrapping up and doing Tweet of the Week and looking ahead to Man United, the other results today turned out really important that we got that 3 points. We would have been just above the drop zone on goal difference today, with West Ham, Stoke both winning. Middlesbrough got a point at Arsenal. So although it's early in the season to look at what other teams are doing, we really needed to get a result today because it's kept us above the sort of magic a point a game sort of ratio that's going to keep us away from trouble.
Yeah, it definitely has. And it was one of those, really, when you look at the table after the game, you kind of have that little, that's a bit of a shame. Like you hope you've been rewarded.
We don't seem to have moved. Like, no. Normally you'd win a game and go up a couple of places. It's like, still 14th.
But you're right, though, Jamie. It's really, really important to make sure that we stay in the hunt. You know, we can't start dropping. If that had gone the other way today and we'd have conceded a 90-minute goal, we would have been right back down there again. And, you know, it just keeps you above the teams. It puts pressure on other relegation rivals as well. I saw after the game, and it was Liam who was in our guest on the podcast last week, had posted a comparison between the last Premier League season that we were there 2 years ago and this season, just to show just how much progress we'd made. And you know, whilst you look at the table, you'd think, you know, it would have been nice to be a couple of places up. After 10 games in the 2014-2015 campaign, we were rock bottom with 4 points, and compare that with after 10 games today and we are 14th with 10 points. So you can't underestimate that level of progress that we've made here, especially as that last season we only ended up going down by a couple of points. So you're completely right. It would have been lovely to have hit the dizzy heights of top of mid-table, wouldn't it? But I'll take just being miles away from that drop zone for the time being and keep the pressure on the likes of Middlesbrough and Hull and Sunderland, who are at the moment, and Swansea as well, who are at the moment struggling.
I think that comparison to the last Premier League season is quite an important one, because I think one of the big factors behind us as going down last time, I think, was how long it took us to adjust to Premier League football. It was I can't remember how many games it took, but it took us a long time for us to get our first win last time. And if we continued the form after that for the rest of the season, we could have maybe stayed up. I'm not sure what the numbers are, but certainly I think having a slow start was a big contributing factor to our relegation. So the fact that we've not had that this year, you know, most of the team who are playing for us now have already got Premier League experience from 2 years ago. That's really, really, really important for us. And if we're to stay up, that's, again, going to be one of the key factors.
Yeah, the goal as well, the comparison Natalie was talking about, we've only played 9 games, so we're much better off.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
An extra game to come, although that game is at Man United next weekend, so yeah, we probably won't expect to get too many more points. That goal difference as well, although we keep getting battered away from home, we're only -5 on goal difference, and there's only Borough below us that have got a better goal difference, so it's not like we're a Hull on -14 or something that's basically another point worse off. So I think everything's looking quite rosy after a fantastic, unexpected win that I don't think many people saw coming, especially when they saw the state of our squad today. So I think it really bodes well that we can get results even when key players are missing. And of course, we've got Gray coming back next weekend, Defoe hopefully maybe available again, Barnes on the way back. Lots of reasons to be positive, and we're accused of being negative on the podcast quite a lot, so hopefully we'll put that one to bed for a little while. And I've got no idea what's coming up next, because Natalie doesn't tell me what Tweet of the Week is, but it's this time in the podcast when we go to Natalie for Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the week, tweet of the week. Tweet of the week, tweet of the week, tweet of the week.
Indeed. And Jamie, you know I like to keep you on your toes.
I hate surprises.
The only time I ever share tweet of the week before we start recording is when I've got about 25 and I need to get Jamie's opinion as to which one to use. But this one was a really good tweet this week, and it was just, it's in the spirit of the humour of how everyone felt after that game, and just going back to how we felt that we didn't really deserve that win today, but we actually don't really care. This week's tweet of the week is from Andy, who tweeted, "Everton lucky we had injuries and suspensions, or it would have been much, much more for Burnley." That just made me laugh. I just think it could have been a heavier defeat. So well done, Andy. That was my tweet of the week.
I still think James Bird's tweet about "I should have taken Arfield off" deserves tweet of the week, because...
Yeah, I do
just
too.
Just for bants. And also it means James gets a mention on the podcast since he's still on his jollies in America. I think he might be back next week. So James Bird fans, I know you're out there. Good news. He'll be back soon. Moving on then to next weekend's game at Manchester United, game at Old Trafford. I think we've already sold out of away tickets. So that one, always a big game, although United not had the best starts of the season. They obviously play Chelsea on Sunday. A lot of people will be listening after that Chelsea game, so they'll either had a better start to the season or a worse one, depending on what happens there. But I suppose this sort of game, Natalie, it's a chance to see some of the best players in the world and not really expect that much from Burnley. A lot of people will be looking forward to seeing like some Pogba, Ibrahimovic, I'm sure, and if we get a result, then great. But expectations will be low for this one.
Yeah, that's not... We're just not going to get anything, are we? I think... how do I feel about this? My worry at the moment is that there's pressure on us to sort out this away form, and it's something that national media is already picking up on and saying that the difference between our home and away form is just massive. We've played three games away from home and got absolutely annihilated in all three games, conceded quite a lot of goals and just really not looked like the side that we see. And I think we've said this on the podcast before, when we play at home, especially today, I always come away thinking, we're staying up this season. This does not look like a side that's going down. We will be fine. And then we play away from home and I just think we're going to be down by Christmas. You know, it's really, really, it's like it plays with your emotions. So in one sense, you know, of course we're not looking, you know, the fourth game away from home is another tough away game. And I think you mentioned last week, Jamie, that you'd be more concerned if we were getting beat 3 or 4 nil away at Hull or Sunderland, for example. So on paper, you don't expect anything at Old Trafford at all. But I would like us to go out and try and get a win. Dyche, for me, for the last three away games, seems to have set his side up to just go out and try and get a draw, and it has not worked. In fact, it's failed quite spectacularly. If you're going to get beat anyway and you're going to concede three goals away from home in trying to go for a point, why not just go for it? And a side like Old Trafford is the perfect opportunity to, because nobody expects you to win. If you That's get true. Beat heavily...
No one goes there and has a real crack at him. Everyone just sits in.
Exactly.
Place for well, why not? So when you really take it to them, you don't really know what to do.
Yeah, I agree. And they are a bit hit and miss, and they have been for a good few seasons now. To be honest, United have been a poor squad and a poor team in terms of their standards since the last couple of seasons before Ferguson retired. It's just they managed to get him. He managed to get them over the line, and they've been poor for ages. So, you know, Old Trafford's a very difficult ground to go to, and it's going to be very intimidating. But for me, I just think at some point we're going to have to sort out this away form. So just go for it. Why not? You've got nothing to lose.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know if it's just not wanting to get, like, absolutely battered, but we've conceded three turns in a row. So why much worse? Like, if we go 2-0 down, then just try and shut up shop and not make it embarrassing. But yeah, I think it's worth having a crack. Like, what's the worst that can happen? We've been losing heavily anyway. One thing that I suppose a lot of people will talk about in the next few days, Kevin, is whether Andre Gray comes back into the team. He sent a tweet today with a lion caged, basically saying, "Let me off the leash, I'm ready to go." And I suppose what Burnley fans want to see is Gray channeling the frustration of missing a few games and really putting a positive performance in, and not letting all this off the field stuff really distract him. We're really wanting to just get on with his football now and make up for a bit of lost time. Do you think he's going to go straight back into the team or dash stick with a 4-5-1 that's been working quite well? What do you think is going to happen next weekend?
It's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because obviously the 4-5-1 has been working very well, but then also you could say it's been working very well at home, but not away. So do we try something different? Do we go back to the 4-4-2 and try something different away from home? I mean, my initial thoughts were that we'd ease him back into it. Obviously, he's been in the headlines. He's had a bit of a torrid time personally. I think, particularly given the way that the team has been working quite well, I thought we'd tease him back into it, given, you know, half an hour at the end. And I think that'd be a really good option, actually. You know, you've got tiring defenders. Bringing a player on with pace, Andre Gray's pace and determination against, for the last half hour against defenders who maybe a little bit slower and a bit more mentally tired, that could prove really, really effective. But there's been a couple of times where he looks really, you know, this has almost really fired him up, this time out, and seeing the team, you know, playing without him has really made him want to get out there and really prove a point. So that's something else to take into consideration. It's do we put him straight back in there, because he's got that point to prove now. He wants to go out there really hungry. He wants to really show what he can do on the field and make sure that he's in the headlines on the back pages rather than the front pages. So that's going to be, I think, the mentality of Gray in the next, well, obviously Dyche works with him every day, so the mentality that Gray's shown, I think he's going to play a big part in what Dyche does. So like I say, I think on a purely non-emotional side, I think the most sensible thing to do is continue with what we are and bring Dyche on. Bring Dyche on.
Sure, on that defence. Dyche in the back four.
And bring Gray on, you know, later on in the game and then maybe go back to a 4-4-2 at some point eventually. But if Gray's attitude is that he's so hungry and he thinks he can go out there and really make a point, then that could be a really big asset for him, so for us. So, yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. It'd be a big call for Dyche to make either way, I think.
Yeah, I think, like, even if he's on the bench, he's going to be more hungry, I think. It's just, if you leave it an hour, we might be 2-0 down, and then there's almost no point bringing him on then because the game's gone. Whereas if you start him, he's still going to have that hunger. I think it's going to be a really, really big call. I'd be able to understand it if Dyche sticks with a 4-5-1. We've done okay without it, although obviously we got battered at Southampton last weekend. But I think 4-4-2 is obviously his preferred option. Whenever he's been able to play it, he's pretty much played it all the time. It would be a relatively easy switch. So just put Arfield back on the wing. Cattley drops back to the bench. Gray comes in. It's pretty much back to the old team, isn't it? Even if Defoe's not available, it's Henrik Marnie in midfield. I think that was quite strong. Natalie,
This is going to be Dyche's biggest challenge, I think, this season, how he handles this. I genuinely can't.
It's
going to
be really interesting. I mean, obviously, we've not heard a lot from Gray, but the tweet that I think we'll put it in the show notes in case you haven't seen it, it does suggest that he's really fired up.
Yeah.
And that it should work in our favour, but it could lose his head and get sent off after 3 minutes. There's a lot of different factors and there's a lot of things that could happen. It's certainly going to be a subplot to keep an eye on next weekend. What would you do? Not what do you think Dyche is going to do. What would you do, Natalie?
God. Right, so are we assuming that that everybody's back fit?
I would say assume Defoe's out because I think a hamstring is normal. I'm not a doctor, but a hamstring's normally a 3-weeker. So I'd be surprised if Defoe's available. Boyd, don't know, because I don't think anyone's said anything about Boyd yet.
Oh my God, this is horrendous.
Assume it's the same squad that's available today, but Gray's available.
I would. This is going to be, this might prove that I just have no idea what I'm talking about. I would.
You've had a good run.
Yeah, everyone's just like, what is this clown talking about? I would keep the starting lineup as it was today, but swap Vokes for Gray, because I think that the 4-5-1 formation is just proving to be too good to go back to 4-4-2. I think we look weaker with 4-4-2, especially away from home. So I'm desperately trying to keep that 4-5-1 formation. But, and this is heartbreaking to say it because everybody knows how much I love Sam Vokes, Sam is not... he's not clinical enough in front of goal for me. And I think with...
he's only back Grace, to back games. Pardon? Top scorer, he's got 3 goals.
Today's he couldn't miss. To be fair, that's a bit of a gift. But for me, he's lacking a little bit of sharpness in front of goal. When you've got an... I guess how I'm looking at this is, if you put Vokes and Gray together, given a chance, and there won't be many chances at Old Trafford, who do you think's more likely to take that chance? I think Gray's more likely than Sam, especially given how hungry he's going to be since he's been banned. So on the basis that I want to keep the 4-5-1 formation, that is my option.
Yeah, I don't think I'd do that, partly because the 4-5-1 with Gray at Leicester just didn't function.
Oh yeah, that is true. Actually, that did.
But we've only seen the 4-4-2 at Chelsea, haven't we? Which is Chelsea. So I don't know how much we can learn from that. And it was the first away game of the season. So I think there's you can argue it in a number of different ways. I think I'd be very tempted to go back to 4-4-2, go back to Graham Volks, go back to what we know worked last season. And like I say, have a real crack at them and try and start with a really good tempo. Don't start like we did against Everton, where we nearly gave them a goal after a minute of the game because we were still asleep. Don't do that. Start with a really good tempo, get in the faces, get at them, and just have a real crack. And I think the 4-4-2 might be the best way to do that. We'll wrap the podcast up now then. Kevin, give us a prediction to round off then. Burnley at Manchester United. These are the sort of games that you want to get promoted for. You want these experiences. I'll say that, we might get beat 5-0 and then you don't want those again.
Yeah, I think given our record of conceding 3 goals in every away game this season, I'm going to be very optimistic and I'm going to go for a 2-0 defeat.
At least it was only 2-0. Natalie, I don't know what you're going to do here. Like, didn't you predict a Burnley win? And then
I did.
Burnley won? I don't understand.
Last week, I put reverse psychology feature on bench because its form was just very, very poor. And I think it needed a spell out of the size to reassess its life and decide whether it wanted to
be a team. What turnstile did you use?
I said I was going to use turnstile 28 and I predicted a win. I did use turnstile 28 and we won. So let's stick with it. Let's see what we do. So I can't go on turnstile 28.
That explains how we got all that terrible luck in the game, really, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right. I don't think they'll let me in. But I am going to predict a Burnley win. I think they will be absolutely on fire after this week's game. I think they'll be up for it. Gray's back. I think he'll go 4-5-1 because I think your choice was rubbish, Jamie, because it didn't agree with mine.
Kind of disagreeing on the podcast, that's not why.
No respect for the boss, no respect. I'm going to predict a 2-0 win for Burnley.
Fair enough. I'm not going to give a prediction because I don't want to end the podcast on saying we're going to get hammered. Bye. But that's pretty much it for this week's podcast. Thanks to everyone who's listened. If you've got any feedback, comments, questions, etc., please do get in touch. Email address podcast@nonainever.net. You can also tweet us @nonainever.net. And if you haven't listened to our LGBT special, please do so. I think it's episode 131, so you can get that at nonainever.net/131 for that one. Finally, as well, thanks to Rick, who provides the artwork for our podcast. You can see that on social media and on the website as well. And if you are interested in sponsoring the podcast, you can still do that. Please get in touch via the email address and social media methods I read out about 30 seconds ago. But that's it for this week. Thanks to Natalie and Kevin for joining me as well. I've been Jamie Smith. This has been the Non and Ever podcast, and we'll be back next week. Goodbye. Everton didn't build their attacks properly. I assume that's a phone. Don't know what else it could be.